rise. The Intermediate Court of Appeals is now reconvened. The Honorable Daniel R. Foley, Alexa D. M. Fujise, and Catherine G. Leonard presiding. Please be seated. Case number 29598, Real Hooker Sport Fishing, Exact Game Fishing, and Fitness Kind v. State of Hawaii Department of Taxation. Dennis Niles for appellants, Damian Elefante for appellee. Argument on the merits.
Mr. Niles.
Thank you. May it please the court, as the clerk indicated, I'm Dennis Niles. I'm here on behalf of the appellants, and I will refer to them as such and possibly occasionally as taxpayers. I thought about how to begin argument in a case of this import, and it just occurred to me that the starting point is what motivated Congress in adopting the Marine Transportation Security Act of 2002. That legislation, of course, came in the wake of the tragedy of 9/11, and it was a response by Congress exercising its paramount authority over navigable waters, both in terms of the regulation of commerce, but as well regulating the security of passengers on those waters. Congress responded by adopting a number of measures that were calculated to ensure the security of the nation's ports and harbors, including very much Lahaina Harbor on the island of Maui. As part of that legislation, they adopted what we have referred to in our briefs as Section 5B, which contains a very explicit prohibition of certain taxes. And it is those taxes that brings us here this morning. In adopting that measure, Congress was, as I indicated, exercising its paramount authority over these waters and these vessels. The case this morning does not involve the extent of the authority of the state of Hawaii to tax certain activity, whether through the general excise tax or otherwise. That is not the issue, and let me emphasize that. We are not here contending that the assessment of general excise tax in this context violated a constitutional prohibition. Instead, we are arguing on the basis of a statute, and it is that statute that is the predicate of our claim. That is significant because it has been the law of our country for more than a century and a half that once Congress acts in a particular area within its jurisdiction, that action displaces the authority of the state to exercise what otherwise might be within its police power. Section 5B displaces any authority that the state of Hawaii would have to impose taxes on the activity of the taxpayers, except as permitted by the narrow exceptions carved out in Section 5B. And where you have a sweeping provision, and I say sweeping because the legislation punctuates the fact that Congress was attacking or directing its emphasis on all manner of taxes, however denominated. And of course that is consistent with the line of cases that we have cited, again, dating to the earliest days of the Republic, that when we are looking at imposts, levies, exactions on vessels operating on navigable waters, the goal is to look at the effect.
Counsel, the state tax is not a direct tax on a vessel, a watercraft, a passenger, or a crew member, is it?
It is a direct tax to the extent that it is calculated based on the earnings of the vessel.
So it's a tax on earnings of a company, not a tax on a vessel, watercraft, passenger, crew member, right?
I disagree with the nuance because it is not the company, but the instrumentality.
Who's paying the tax?
I'm sorry?
Who's paying the tax?
The tax is paid by the owner of the vessel. There's no question.
And the company? The company that owns the vessel? Is there a company?
Yes, it's a Hawaii corporation, or the three entities are Hawaii corporations.
And the tax is based on gross revenues?
The earnings of the vessel, which we have.
Gross revenues of the company.
Yes, I mean, you could refer to it as gross revenues of the company.
What happens if a company has vessels as part of its operations? Does the state then have to apportion? Can tax part of the gross revenues and has to figure out what part of those gross revenues don't come from vessels and can't tax that? Is that how it would work?
And indeed, that is how it works. And as we demonstrated in this record, there are certain activities. The sale of a T-shirt ashore by the company is subject to the general excise tax. We don't dispute that.
So it was the company who would do that apportionment and then tell the government what they could tax and what they couldn't?
Well, what we think that once the court definitively rules on our claim and declares the assessment of general excise tax on these specific earnings, the taxpayers will file an appropriate return, yes, making the allocation.
Now, if they're selling food and beverage on the vessel, can that be taxed?
Well, they don't do that.
But hypothetical, could that be taxed, Mr. Knox?
Hypothetically, I would concede that the sale of something of that nature arguably would be subject to.
So then the corporation would have to apportion its gross revenues that it doesn't come from vessels, and then even apportion the gross revenues that come from the vessels to, say, food and beverages over here, fishing over here. Or, you know, how's this going to work?
Well, I take a transactional view of it. Okay, and if you
and this is what the U.S. Congress had in mind to require the states to do this.
What this Congress of the United States had in mind was to prevent the states from taxing vessels, crew, or passengers when those vessels are operating on navigable waters. And I think that it is clear what the intent was to prohibit all such taxes unless they fell within one of the exceptions. But you can parse it out. I mean, to the extent that there are discrete transactions occurring on the vessel, those would be subject to general excise tax. And if I may give you an example of how that works in real life, if you have a photographer aboard the vessel, and the photographer, while the vessel is underway, takes the picture of a passenger and then sells that passenger the photograph, which is commonplace, that would be a discrete transaction subject to the excise tax, because it is not the transaction does not involve the sale of passage aboard a vessel operating on navigable waters.
When you have a federal statute, and let's say it may not be clear on its face, because it certainly doesn't say gross revenues for the business itself, are those federal statutes to be construed broadly or narrowly when you're dealing with the issue of federal preemption?
When you are dealing against the historical backdrop that we have in this case.
But just as a general, when we're talking about federal preemption of the state activity.
Well, again, my point is, I think, Judge Foley, it depends on the context.
So there's no general rule?
I think the general rule is that preemption will be viewed narrowly. I mean, and hence the burden has been on us to, as opposed to the state, the burden has been on us to demonstrate why, in this instance, application of the general excise tax law is preempted. So typically the focus is narrow, all right? Now, having said that, we are not, as I argue in our briefs, operating on a clean slate. We have sent a century and a half where the courts have said repeatedly in this context, that is to say, when Congress has exercised its authority over navigable waters and has passed legislation regulating the operation of vessels, in that context, you look at the indirect as well as the direct effects. And the court has gone out of its way to avoid the labeling game resorted to by the states, where they will call what clearly is a excise tax, they will call it a tax on personal property, as was the case in the recent Polar Star case, which we cited.
Does this federal preemption also prohibit the state from dockage fees?
No, as long as they are.
Isn't that taxing under the term fee of a vessel?
But it's specifically authorized by.
So they can't.
I'm
they,
sorry?
They can't impose a charge, whether it's a fee or a tax, on a vessel.
Yes, of course. We haven't argued to the contrary, because this is not a fee for such activity. And as we point out in our brief,
isn't
and
that more direct? There you're actually charging the vessel itself as opposed to the excise tax, which is gross revenue to the business.
Well,
isn't that more direct on a vessel?
Well, no, that's not correct, because the fees that are actually paid by these operators, the percentage fee, and it's currently 3% for the privilege of using the facilities of the state of Hawaii, that fee is levied not on the vessel, but on the owners of the vessel pursuant to the commercial permits that they have.
Well, just as with the gross revenue, it's not on the vessel, it's on the owner. It's on the corporation, it's on the business. What's the difference? Who pays the fee? Who pays the tax?
Well, I'm not sure I'm seeing the distinction, because we are saying there is no difference between a levy of a vessel and a levy of the owner, where the effect is the same. That is, you are taxing the earnings of the vessel. That is to say, the money is generated from the sale of the vessel. And I wanted to,
let me follow up on that, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
Because I think this is the nut for us, whether the tax on the earnings of the corporation is a tax on the vessel. And you mentioned a Polar Star case. I think it would be helpful if you tell us specifically what cases that we must follow that say that the tax on the gross receipts of the company owning the vessel is a tax on the vessel. Because this statute, unlike the statute in the Aloha Airlines case, doesn't specifically reference a tax on gross receipts. So that would help us.
The reason the court or the legislation at issue in Aloha Airlines referred to gross receipts is because the tax at issue was not on the aircraft themselves. The tax was limited to passengers. And in that context, Congress thought it appropriate to say you can't tax the passengers, nor can you tax the gross receipts earned by the airline in transporting those passengers. And that's an important distinction,
right,
because
Section 5B says you can't tax the passengers or the vessels too, right?
No, it indeed it does, but it's in the maritime context, where we have 150 years of case law saying that when we look at the word vessel, and we are construing the word vessel, we are to look at the effects of the tax, both direct and indirect.
Okay, but then just point me in that direction again, because maybe we didn't get that completely from the briefs. What cases specifically do we need to follow that will tell us a tax on the gross receipts of the taxpayer is a tax on the vessel or the passenger?
Well, I would cite the Gloucester Ferry case and the language in Gloucester Ferry that makes very clear that when you are directing something that has an effect on a vessel operating on navigable waters, however that is denominated, you are in that context running afoul of the constitutional prohibition of duties of tonnage. Okay, and so we invoke that line of cases to say when Congress uses the word vessel, it was operating in an informed way, informed by, you know, a century and a half of precedent, saying that when we are talking about vessel, we are talking also about the owners of the vessel. And we cite the case, the Moran case, I believe it is, that talked about taxation of the dividends earned by a company in transporting passengers. And the Supreme Court said, you can't evade the prohibition on duties of tonnage by taxing the dividends or the earnings. And you know, we set out that case, and we think that that is an appropriate analog. The other thing I wanted to, and I think this segues back to my attempt to respond to Judge Foley's question. We agree with the framework in terms of governing how you construe these provisions, and you read the words in context. I would direct this court's attention to Section 3 of the enumerated exceptions in the Act. And in Section 3, it creates an exception for personal property taxes on vessels. There's no mention in that section of an exemption available to the owners of the vessel. Instead, Congress said, no, we are exempting personal property taxes on vessels. Well, we all know, certainly Polar Star is an example, that the people that pay the personal property taxes is not the vessel, the inanimate object, but the owners of the vessel, because that is upon whom the burden falls. So we make the point that when Congress said vessel, both in the general prohibition as well as the exception, without making reference to owners, that it was understood, as I say, based on the history of Supreme Court jurisprudence, that vessel means owners of vessels as well and the earnings of the vessel. I see the yellow light is up. I did reserve some time to respond to the comments of my able colleague, and so I'll stand aside. And
thank you, Mr. Knox.
May it please the court. My name is Damian Alifante on behalf of the Department of Taxation. As I'm going to refer to the taxpayers in this case rather than going to Real Hooker, Finest Kind, and I think it's exacting and fishing. So taxpayers in general refer to the whole corporations in my particular this particular situation. So the general excise tax is a tax on gross receipts, whether or not they earn it on the water or on land. It's a gross receipts tax. When the court indicated, well, the only exception that the taxpayers are arguing is that this particular law is preempted by 33 U.S.C. Section 5. If you read Section 5 carefully, nothing in that particular section indicates that gross receipts from commerce over water is not subject to tax. What they've argued is that the term vessel, like he indicated this morning, includes not only the vessel, but the owner of that particular vessel. There's no case law that indicates that particular situation where you have to equate vessel to a vessel owner. If you need to find a definition of the word vessel, I believe that Section 1, USC Section 3, indicates what vessel is, which is basically the watercraft that sails over the water. And then there's a Supreme Court case, I believe it was Foremost versus Richardson, which indicates that a vessel is a watercraft, basically whatever travels over water. So purposes of any time for navigation over water, I guess a vessel is a boat. What the general excise tax is a tax on the corporation's income. Nothing in the legislative history of Section 5 indicates that Congress intended to preclude states from taxing the owners or corporations that do business over the water. In fact, I believe the legislative history indicates that it's not supposed to affect sales or income taxes on a particular vessel.
It specifically talks in terms of income taxes?
Yes, Your Honor. And if you look at the general excise tax as a tax on income, it falls within that particular situation, Your Honor.
Well, what was it intended to preempt?
If you look at the legislative history, the legislative history indicates that it was supposed to address a certain specific situation. I do believe it was for Alaska, where ships would sail through a given jurisdiction and be taxed just by sailing through that particular jurisdiction. That's the only situation that this particular section was to address. And with respect to federal preemption, and I do believe Judge Foley had pointed, if you're going to construe a statute for preemption, it has to be strictly construed. So if you look at the strict language of the statute, you can't tax a passenger or a vessel. The general excise tax doesn't do that. You have to look at the corporation for the particular tax. I don't know if I should go into this, but I mean, if you do equate the word vessel to a vessel's owner, then you'd also have to continue that particular definition to the next part of Section 5, where it gives the exemption. So the same word vessels, as long as you're servicing the vessel, which basically also includes the owners of the vessel, you're free to tax. So if the general excise tax is deemed to be a tax on the vessel or vessel owner, the general excise tax also provides services to the vessel and the vessel's owner. You can see in this court that they do business in Hawaii. They have the benefits and protections of Hawaii's laws. They actually can be able to use the court system to make their arguments with respect to these particular taxes. So with respect to that definition, if you assume that particular definition, then you'd have to continue that definition onto the next section for the exemptions. We're not arguing that. We're arguing that you have to strictly construe 33 U.S.C. 5 to only include taxes, tolls, or operational charges on a particular vessel. The general excise tax does not do that. It's a tax on a corporation's or a corporate's income. And if I don't think Congress intended that corporate owners to apportion out certain sections, because if you go down that route, you not only have to apportion the beverages that's sold, you have to apportion out the cost to the what the passengers pay for the experience of those captains, the rental of not only the vessel but the fishing lines, everything else but the vessel itself. So I don't know if you can make that appropriation, or I don't know if it's practically feasible for an owner of a vessel to make that type of appropriation. But if you go down that particular situation, you open up a can of worms with respect to apportionment. And I mean, I can see taxpayers taking liberties with respect to what's cost and what's not cost that's taxable.
Mr. Elefante, the taxpayers in this case cite the Gloucester Ferry case and other, I don't want to call them old, but well-established Supreme Court precedent for the proposition that the tax on the earnings from a vessel is tax on a vessel. How do you distinguish Gloucester Ferry or Gloucester Ferry?
Actually, with respect to Gloucester Ferry, the court actually also recognized that vessels engaged in foreign and interstate commerce can be taxed at their legal situs, which is basically their home port. In this case, the taxpayer's home port is Hawaii, so the state can tax the income from that particular vessel. What was that other case that you pointed out to?
No, well, so you're saying that none of the cases cited by the taxpayers here stand for the proposition that a tax on gross receipts is a tax on the vessel?
None of the cases directly make that particular point, Your Honor. If there's no more questions, I'm going to kind of wrap up with respect to the general excise tax. General excise tax is a tax on a corporation. A corporation's gross income that's earned doesn't indicate whether or not, well, the preemption argument that the taxpayer presents doesn't indicate that a tax can't be imposed on the gross earnings of a vessel or a corporation. You have to construe Section 5 to only be a tax on a vessel or a passenger. If you were to expand it, it'll be against the analysis with respect to preemption. You'd also have to expand it for operational charges, fees, and other stuff, which gets into another realm that Even the taxpayers themselves can't charge anything for the particular fare. And I don't think it was intended to do that. So as the outcome of this case, we're asking the court to affirm the tax court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Very briefly, let me begin with the last point. I was surprised that he would continue to make the argument that the taxpayers somehow themselves are in violation of the act because he or the state views them as non-federal interests. And we set forth in our reply brief the legislation that makes clear that the reference to non-federal interests is to governmental entities and entities of that nature and not others. That's one point. You know, the next point, and I really have to emphasize that it was the prerogative of Congress. There is no issue in this case about the authority of Congress to determine when a vessel operating on navigable waters may be taxed and under what circumstances. Congress made that judgment, and we would urge the court to respect that judgment and the language that was used in light of the precedents that we
counsel. As far as the Congress intent, I'm looking at the House conference report, and it says the purpose of this amendment, 5B, was to clarify existing law with respect to constitutionally permitted fees and taxes on vessels, to prohibit fees and taxes on a vessel simply because that vessel sails through a given jurisdiction. The report also noted the amendment did not affect whether sales or income taxes are applicable with respect to vessels. What's that mean?
Well, it doesn't operate to alter the basic language chosen by Congress. And we set out in our brief.
We looked at this for the Congress's intent, right? The committee report?
No, that's where the Aloha Airlines case faulted our Supreme Court because in that case, the Hawaii Supreme Court looked to the legislative history to construe the provision at issue in that case. And we would submit that the court here would be making the same mistake.
So you don't see this House Conference Committee report language consistent with the statute? The way you read the statute.
I do not, and nor does former Representative Young, when he introduced an amendment to explicitly authorize assessment of the taxes.
In terms of weight of, in terms of legislative documents, isn't a conference committee report given more weight than statements of one individual on the floor?
Quite honestly, I would submit not necessarily so.
But isn't that sort of a general rule of?
I don't believe that.
We look to, if everybody at the House speaks, we have to parse through the 365 members to figure out what the intent is and not look at the committee report?
Well, I'm not saying you can't look at the committee report, but I think you have to weigh the committee report in language that Congress ultimately adopted, and it is that language that is unambiguous.
So you're asking this court to disregard the language of that report?
I'm asking this court to follow federal law, which is...
Disregard the language of this report, that language I just read. You're asking us to disregard that?
Yes. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, because this exercise is not guided by the committee report.
I wanted an answer, that's all, that's fine.
Okay, and then the final point, I want to come back to, you know, to the question, the difficulty of the mechanics and the possibility that the taxpayer would take liberties in it making the allocations. Now, the state has already addressed that, frankly, in legislation that will take effect in July of this year, which will require taxpayers who are claiming exemptions from the general excise tax to articulate the basis for the claimed exemption and gives the state certain remedies, all with an eye towards ensuring that the exemption claim is not being abused. So I think that will allay any concern that the interpretation that we think mandated by the statute would invite abuse. And again, it is the exercise here is following the intent of Congress which we submit can be gleaned from the legislation in light of the history that brings us here, not comments that can be added to a committee report, and that at the end of the day is our ultimate position, in addition to the equivocal remarks that we cite that make clear that the prohibition is that to, with respect to all taxes. My time is up.
Thank you, Council. Thank you. Take the matter under advisement.
All rise. Court is now adjourned.